There is so much about ministry that can be talked about in business terms. I could talk about my members as clients. That doesn't fly totally, but I could think about them in those terms. I try to be in the home of all of our members at least once. I have been in the home of every new member. Well, there are probably a few exceptions. It's almost a requirement to be a member at Falls Church. Somebody has to meet with you. I recommend that. Sometime back, I don't want to give you the wrong impression, but sometime back we had two young men to show up, and of course, our congregation is like every congregation. We want everybody we can get, and so these two guys came, and they came fairly regularly, and they would come in and slip out on Sunday night. And so one of our elders went and said, hey, we noticed that you've been coming. Y'all members of the Church of Christ? Oh, yes, sir, we are. Great. Where are you from? They told him. He said, we want you to be members here. Let me get you a membership form. And so we have a little form you have to fill out. And so he went and got the membership form. Fortunately, he could only find one. I say fortunately because he came to me and he said, you know where there's any membership forms? And I said, for who? And he said, well, these two guys. I said, have you talked to them? Well, they're new and they're looking for a church home, so I'm giving them a form. I said, did you sit down and talk to them? No. I said, well, let's talk to them. So we walk back and greet them and begin to talk to them. Turns out that they are gay. We have gay members at Falls Church, okay? But we don't have any married gay members at Falls Church. We have had gay members before at Falls Church. There are some things that just, we can't do anything about this. The scriptures are plain, we feel. And I said, well, we can't find the other form. Tell you what, we need to sit down and talk. They didn't come back. And now there's nothing about how we treated them that I think they could have thought was offensive. Okay? But there's some things that we cannot do. But you can't just take everybody, willy-nilly, and make them a member of your congregation. You become a member at Falls Church, we want you to be involved. But you may not teach a children's Bible class until you've been a member for 6 months. And you have to sign a form that in which you agree to a background check. Now, we have never done a background check on anybody, but you have to be willing to sign the form, okay? And we keep the forms under lock and key. If we need it, we know we can use it. You said it'd be okay, so that's what we do. But these are the kinds of things that are incumbent upon us. And all of them, we look at that and we say, that doesn't feel quite spiritual enough. But it's all part of the business of ministry and the business of being the church. We want to minister to everybody, as I said. We've in years gone by, had, if you haven't had this experience, you will. Couples come to church. They grew up in the church. You know where they're from. You know what congregations they're from. And you think, this is going to be young couples. This is going to be great. Glad to get them. Then you find out they're not married. They're living together. How are we going to deal with this, with us, it results in conversations. We're nice, but we have these conversations and we talk to them about, what the Bible has to say and how we feel about this, sometimes folks get married and sometimes they don't. And sometimes they leave, and sometimes they stay and just don't become members, okay? And we don't use them. We have a database that we operate off of. Everybody who signs a membership form, you get to sign up for the work that you're interested in, and our ministry leaders work off of that list. They're not allowed to go willy-nilly and just ask people to do stuff. And if they go and talk to somebody and they agree, then they have to come back and say, we need to add this to their membership form. But if they don't have a form, they can't do the stuff. Okay. I think that in the days to come, we will have more difficulties, and we'll have to find ways to deal in a Christ-like way with these situations. But we want to treat people as we believe that Jesus would treat them. Well, let's talk about money. It's tough, particularly when everybody in the last session said that preaching is a calling from God, and now we're going to talk about money, you know? You got to be kind of careful about that calling from God business, though. How do you know? How do you know that this is what the Lord wants you? You've heard the story, have you not, about the young man who got up to give his first sermon, and when he got done, one of the good sisters, it's always a good sister, of the congregation, because they care, you know? Good sister went up to him, and she said, young man, whatever possessed you to think you could preach? And he said, I was out one day and walking through the field and looked up, and the clouds just converged to three letters, GPC. And that meant go preach Christ. And the lady said, I think probably it meant go plant cotton. In any case, or you know, go pick corn or something along that line. How do you know? My undergraduate degree is in finance and accounting. It's been helpful to me. And when I got ready to graduate, my father called me. I'd been preaching all through college. My father called me and he said, you got a job? I said, no. What are you going to do? Dad, honestly, I don't know. All I know is I got to move out of this dorm. And I'm probably coming home. He said, have you thought about preaching full time? Now, my father was a preacher, missionary. And I said, well, to be honest about it, no. It hasn't entered my mind. I've done it, but, you know, I just don't know. And he said, why don't you do it for a while and see if it suits you? And if it does, then maybe you should do that. But he said, you never know till you try. And I said, well, Dad, I don't know of any churches looking. I guest speak at a lot of different churches, but they all have preachers. He said, I just talked to a man at Lipscomb University at their lectureship, and he's in Illinois, and they need a preacher. And I've got his name and his phone number, and I told him that my son might be interested and that you would call. And I said, all right, I'll give him a call. And the rest is history. That was my first church, and I never looked back. I'd been living on $100 a month in college. And when I went to interview in Illinois for this job, they, of course, after preaching for them two or three weeks, can't remember how long, they said, we'd like you to come and preach here full time. How much would it cost for you to do that? What are you looking for? I'd been living on $100 a month. I thought $100 a week was a fortune. And so I said, $100 a week is what I think would be good to live on. And they said, sold. And on top of that, we're going to give you a house. Now, you know, when the brethren say they're going to give you a house, they don't really mean to give you a house, okay? They're going to let you stay in the house. So they gave me a house and $100 a week, but I didn't have any furniture. And so I went and borrowed $1,200, and I bought furniture, and the payment on the $1,200 was $65 a month, and my car payment was $65 a month. So now 1 month's salary is gone. For furniture and automobile. The house came with a yard. I had a yard but didn't have a mower. The church had a mower, so I borrowed the church's mower. Brethren didn't seem to like that a whole lot, but they did want the yard mowed, so they got used to that. At the year end of my first year, I made a grand total of $2,200, and I prepared to file my tax return. Social Security was 11.7% back in those days, and I had to pay both sides of it because you're considered self-employed for Social Security purposes. And so that meant that on my $2,200, I owed the federal government $257.40, and I had no, you can't deduct anything, okay? I mean, there it is. That's how much you made. 11.7%, you got to pay. Besides all of that, the nice house that they gave me had a fair rental value of $150 a month. Guess what? You got to pay Social Security tax on the fair rental value of that home. And that came to another $87.50. That was just the beginning of my taxes. I owe the federal government $345.15. And I didn't have $100 to my name. The next year, my student loans came due. I started paying on them. Also that year, I got married. Also that year, I wisely, best investment I ever made, I bought health insurance. And my salary increased because I got married to $125 a week, and we were still going in the hole. Fortunately, I was a college grad, and credit was easy to get. And unfortunately, I got a lot of it. Fortunately, my wife got a job. Unfortunately, she got pregnant. She didn't get pregnant on her own, okay? So I take the blame for that. And the following year, we had our first child, and we were having trouble paying the light bill. I'd asked for a raise. They begrudgingly gave it to me. I decided then and there, I will never ask for a raise again. I'm done. I felt so insignificant having asked for that and being treated that way. And I'm never going to do it again. And I have not asked till this day. And as I told you in the first session, maybe that was a mistake, okay? So the following year, we had our first child, and as I said, we had trouble paying the light bill. And my father-in-law came to me, and he said, I don't want to get in your business. When he said that to me, I always knew he was about to get in my business. He said, how serious are you about this preaching thing? Is that really what you want to do? And I was offended. And I said, absolutely. I've given my life to this work. I'm going to preach the gospel for Jesus. And he said, that's enough said. I'll never ask you again. What he did not say, and what I did not find out until much later, was that he'd arranged for me to take an accounting job at double my present salary, plus health insurance. It would have been a marvelous job. But I couldn't live on what I was making. And the brethren weren't going to give me any more. I may not have been worth any more, okay? Looking at it from a business perspective, how much are you worth, really? You know? Don't know. But I couldn't live on that. And so I found another place paying me $225 a week, and not quite double, but significantly more, and I took it. My wife found a job, and while our money troubles were not forever behind us, I was never so desperate again. It would have been easy for me to blame the brethren for this. They just didn't pay enough. But I think the blame lay entirely with me. I had an obligation to myself, to my future, to my wife, to her future, to our children, to their future. And that obligation was mine. It is not the church's. It is not the brethren's. It's mine. And I've got to be cognizant of that. But maybe part of the problem is theological. I'd grown up hearing preachers say that preachers don't preach for money. And when you take that apart, you got to ask yourself, then how are you going to eat? Okay? Somebody's got to pick up the tab. But I'd been told that. That was ingrained in me. And so I thought it, you know, even having to ask for a raise was a bad thing. And you just shouldn't talk about money. And preachers shouldn't think about money. But I began to change all that when I moved. Some good brethren called me. They said, we want you to come work with our congregation. And we're going to send professional movers to move you. And I said, there is no need for you to do that. There is no need for the church to be burdened. That's a lot of money. I'll rent a U-Haul. If you pay for the U-Haul, we'll move ourselves. My wife had had a baby 5 months before, okay? No way she's going to help me move that refrigerator. And they said, okay, you know, whatever you want to do. My father-in-law came down, and he helped me move. And it was hot. It was August. And man, we were sweating up a storm, and I already had a larger library than most preachers who are 23 years old, okay? And so we're packing boxes, and my father-in-law says, "I just don't understand why a church would treat a preacher like this." And it was my fault, my fault. And I didn't say anything. Probably should have. I didn't want to admit it. But I got to thinking, you know what? It matters. It matters to the world how they see the church treat the preacher. And it may be the preacher's fault that the church is treating him this way, but it doesn't look good. And so you need to be thinking about that too. I made up my mind I would never be a preacher who just preaches for the money. I hope that no one ever saw me that way. But I also made up my mind that if I was going to preach full time, that I was going to have to get paid. And if that burdened the church, they just have to get burdened. It was all right. I think I've been well paid, decently paid, for a preacher. Okay? Not an accountant or a banker or any of those other things that I could have done, but that's my choice. But I think that I've been well paid on the whole for being a preacher. I moved three more times after that first move. I've never paid for another move. Okay? That's part of the package. So the question is, how much money should we make? And so if you'll write your salaries down and pass them forward, I'll read them. No, I'm kidding. In 2004, the Seibert Institute at Abilene Christian University, I was going to write the URL on the board, but it's a long one. You know, it's www.acu.edu/Seibert/institute/4/ So just Google ACU and Seibert Institute, okay? And it'll take you to their website. It's a marvelous website. But in 2004, they began conducting surveys on ministry compensation. And in the first one, over 500 ministers participated. In the most recent one, 2016, only 395 ministers participated. I am simply not confident that's enough to get a good picture. And so I want to urge you to go to their website, and whatever you have to do to sign up, it's anonymous. Yes, somebody might be able to figure out who you are if they see that you live in some place in, I don't know, Outer Mongolia, and you're making $350,000 a year, and that's an anomaly, so they kind of figure out who you are, maybe. But in general, it's all anonymous. You don't have to put your name down. And I think we would do ourselves as preachers a good service if we would participate in some of these surveys so that when the information comes together, we have something to work from. The 2016 survey tracks 12 different types of ministry. For the most part, I've talked about preachers. But there are 12 different types of ministers. It was amazing to me, one of the ministers, one of the categories was the education minister. And in 2015, I think it was, the 2015, the education ministers were making significantly more than the pulpit guys. And I was thinking, that might be a transition element, people don't want to hear you anymore, maybe you could transition into that. The change goes back, I think, in 2016, but where the pulpit guys is making the most money, if we're just talking about that. But according to the survey, the average preacher makes $53,082. He receives a housing allowance. Let's see if I can put this on the board. $53,082. In addition to that, he receives a housing allowance of $18,500. And on top of that, he receives a benefits package of $8,700. And so you add all this together. Have I done it right? 80 grand? Something like that. Maybe not. 82? Yep. Yep. $80,282. If you're not making that, you could feel really bad about yourself. Okay. This guy has been in ministry 24 years. He has been preaching for 10 years. Okay. So that gives you an idea of what you're looking at here. This is just an average. You may be above it. You may be below it. And you know, who knows what it is that you need to be making. I will tell you this. 1/3 of all the preachers surveyed have opted out of Social Security. I'm coming back to that in a minute. But they've opted out of Social Security. 31% of them have bachelor degrees. 40% of them have master's degrees. And 16% of those surveyed, and remember the survey is entirely too small, 16% of those surveys have doctorate degrees. 4% of them have attended a preacher training school. Okay? Now I want you to think with me about that. I don't have anything against preacher training schools, all right? But I wonder why they're only 4%. Because it's just a 2-year school. You can churn those guys out if you can get them to come. So what's happening here? I don't know this, but I wonder if they're simply not lasting. Okay? I don't know it, but it's worth somebody studying just to see. This is the average guy. What should you be making? Okay? How do you figure? You go to interview for a congregation and you need to know, you know, they're going to say, how much? How much is it going to take? And you got to come up with a figure. Or you got to say, you first. You know, what are you offering? You know, we're offering $300,000. Well, cool, that ought to be just about enough. You know, I might be able to come for that. So if you get offered that, glory be. You got to have a figure. How do you compute the figure? Well, let me make some suggestions to you. First of all, we start with Social Security. And whatever this bottom line figure is, we'll call it X. Whatever the bottom line figure is, you're going to need 15.3% of X to start. Because you got to pay that. And there are no deductions. And if you got a house, it's computed on the house too. And there's no good way out of it. 1/3 of the preachers, did I say that? 1/3 of the preachers have opted out of Social Security. Some years ago, we were interviewing missionaries. And one of them came to us, had been to a missions course, and a couple of years studying missions. And so I always talk to the preachers about their money, about how they're thinking about it, about their future. I'm an older guy now. I can get away with that. They don't have to tell me anything, but I get to ask, and they can just say none of your business, or they can pony up some information, okay? So I asked him about it, and he said, well, I opted out of Social Security. He said, I just opted out because I didn't think that it was, it would save the church some money. That's what he said. It saved the church some money. Well, by the way, if 1/3 of the people across the board opt out, that means 1/3 of you guys have opted out. Okay? I'm not here to scare you. But one of these days you're going to get old. What are you going to do? You can't, when you turn 65, is it you're supposed to go on Medicare? I'm not 65 yet, so I don't know. 65, you go on Medicare. I can promise you this. You will not get Medicare. And you cannot buy health insurance. You cannot buy enough health insurance to cover and make up for Medicare if you are not eligible for Medicare. So what in the world are you going to do? Most of our money that we've spent in our whole lifetime on healthcare is spent in the last year of your life. Okay, that's how expensive. If you could just die a year earlier, you could save yourself all that money. So it's a scary thing, and I tell people you can't opt out. The brethren object to paying your Social Security for you, and I don't blame them. But I think they ought to pay half. Now, there's no real way they can do that without it costing you. If they pay half of this, that's what, 7.65%? If they pay you on top of your salary 7.65%, then you actually have to pay 15.3% of that 7.65%. But that's okay. That means that I don't have to pay 84.7% of what this was. It still saves me some money. And it's true that I have to pay taxes on that money, but that's okay too, because I'm still coming out ahead, all right? They can't pay the whole thing for you and avoid all of this because of the way that the tax is structured. And by the way, you remember I told you in the last class, don't take tax advice from preachers? I'm just telling you, that's my experience, okay? But Social Security is the really big deal, and whatever your bottom line is, you got to remember, you got to come up with that figure. Don't let it get by you. It has to be filed quarterly, and it's easy to let it slide. I'll pay it next time. Next time, it's an even bigger amount of money. So you need to pay attention to it. You don't have an HR department. You are your HR department. So you have to be sure that you have set this aside and that you're coming up with it too. Okay. In addition to this, you have health insurance. Obamacare may be throwing a monkey wrench into what I'm about to tell you. I'm not quite sure. And the reason is that the latest information I have, which is in this year's textbook for preachers, is that some of this is kind of up in the air. But some preachers, their wives work, and the wife has health insurance through her company, and it's cheap, and she gets to put you on, and she gets to put the kids on, and that works out really well. Okay. My scare has always been, what if she loses her job? What if you lose your job? What if you lose your job and you have to move, and now she's losing her job, and now you don't have health insurance anymore? I have a friend of mine who preaches, and he used to play the healthcare game. About every 2 years, he'd farm out the healthcare. You know, I want to find the cheapest health insurance, and then he would go with whatever the cheapest health insurance was. And so every 2 years, he was always, you know, moving things along. But 1 year, he had a bout of high blood pressure, and he accidentally let his health insurance lapse because he had intended to re-up with another company and, you know, get a better price. And when it lapsed, he became uninsurable. Those things happen. Health insurance is not something you want to play with because it is incredibly important, and it can be financially ruinous for you. If you are an elder in our class today, I would advise you to make having health insurance a condition of employment and putting it in the minister's contract. He must provide proof of health insurance. He must do it every year. Okay. I didn't dream this up on my own. I interviewed for a congregation when I was moving from one church to another, and one of the questions was, do you have health insurance? And I said, yes. And they said, that's a condition of employment. And I said, then that needs to go in our contract. But when the brethren come up with oddities like that, there's always a backstory about why they've come up with this. And the backstory was that a previous preacher had not had health insurance. They'd never thought about it. And he got sick and he had to go to the hospital and he couldn't pay the hospital bill. And the hospital was after him for paying the bill, and they knew that he was employed by the church, and he looked like a deadbeat who was employed by the church. And it looked bad on the church. And the church paid the bill so that it wouldn't look bad on them. And they said, never again. Okay? So it's always an issue. And I would say this needs to be really part of your, you need to think about this. Okay? How much does it cost? With Obamacare, as I said, some of this is up in the air. I have the church take out, I forgot how much, it seems like it's $800 a month for my health insurance. And it's actually on a draw. My health insurance company reaches into the church's bank account and pulls out that money. The church doesn't even get to vote on it. You know, nobody gets to decide. You don't have to worry about anybody writing a check because I don't want anybody messing up. So the health insurance company comes to the church's bank account and they pull out that money every quarter so that I know that it's paid. And because the church pays it, and I've had this for a long time, I'm grandfathered in a lot of different ways, because the church pays it, it doesn't go on my W-2. And so I don't have to pay taxes on that money. Now, it also means I don't get to deduct that money, but that's okay because you don't get to deduct it all anyway. You only get to deduct a percentage of your health insurance and your health insurance premiums, okay? Now, part of this that's up in the air is with Obamacare, I'm not quite sure that's kosher. Yes, sir. Yeah. There's something called an accountability plan. You'll have to do the legwork on this. Accountability plans where you set up certain expense items and the church says, for example, if you're making $70,000 a year, we're going to give you $55,000 a year and we're going to give you an expense account of $15,000. And this expense account is for XYZ. And you have to actually spend the $15,000 in order to get it. But you could spend it on, you buy suits with it. I mean, from what I understand. Remember, don't take tax advice from me. There are lots of things that you can use this for. Mileage, that sort of thing. You know, your automobile. Now, there are iffy areas here. You really have to be careful with it. But there are folks whose job it is to set these kinds of things up. And it may be that you can route your health insurance through an accountability plan, but I'm not totally sure about that. But you have to think about it. That's what I said. This is a business. You got to think about how you're going to construct your income and how you're going to handle it. There is also housing. What are you going to do here? The brethren provide you a home. Remember, you have to pay Social Security tax on it. You don't have to pay income tax, but you got to pay Social Security tax on the house if they provide you the home. It is far better if you can own a home. Because if you own a home, you get a double tax deduction as of now. Whether that continues, not sure, but you get a double tax deduction. In the first place, your mortgage payment is part of your housing allowance. You get to designate a housing allowance. So the mortgage payment comes out of there. And then you get to write off the interest in another way on your tax form. So it's like a double deduction. And it's really cool. You know, it's like getting a 401k and having your company match it. You know, never turn down matching funds. I know a preacher who has been with the church for nearly 20 years and they've offered to match some of his IRA contributions. He's never made an IRA contribution. He's thrown away thousands of dollars. You know, because he never makes this particular contribution. This is one way of doing it. Now, of course, what's the downside of owning your house? Liquid. Yeah, it's not liquid. Yeah. And if you have to move, you're kind of stuck with it. That can be a blessing. Can be. I bought my first home in West Tennessee. And when I left West Tennessee, I tried to sell it, and it wouldn't sell, so I rented it. I rented it for 30 years. My renters paid the mortgage. For 28 of those 30 years, I had the same renters, and they paid the mortgage. Now, that doesn't always work. I had another piece of rental property, and we had to get lawyers to get them out, you know? So there's a downside to it, but there is no free money in the world. You have to work for it. And so if you've got rental property, you got to keep it up. And you know, there are certain risks with this, but you got to know how much it's going to cost for housing. And then let's talk about insurance. If you're young, what are you going to do if you die? You may be in excellent health, but you could get run over by a truck, you know? What's going to happen to your family? What will they do? And so you need to think about that. They'll need to move. In my contract, it says that for the first year, if I die or get killed, that the church is obligated to move my wife back or wherever she wants to go. It can't be Hawaii, okay? But move back to a place where she can live and they pick up the tab, okay? They take a risk for a year. But it's one of the ways that I've tried to insure her against something catastrophic happening. But life insurance is incredibly important. A preacher friend of mine was on vacation riding a little surfboard, one of those little wave boards, got hit by a freak wave, broke his back, died. No money. What are you going to do? Now, maybe everybody's in the same boat, okay? But it's at least a boat that you need to think about. So we have life insurance, we have health insurance, disability insurance. Social Security will cover you if you're under Social Security, if you become disabled. But if you can afford disability insurance gives you time to retool. Usually a year, 2 years, 3 years, depending on the policy, to kind of retool your life. If I can't get in the pulpit again, what am I going to do? And so you could think about disability insurance. Finally, long-term care. Okay. Won't take a poll about how many people have long-term care, but my wife and I have seen the need for long-term care. The earlier you buy it, the longer you pay for it, but the less money you pay. If you buy it late in life, then it costs a lot of money, but it's tough to live without. I have a mother-in-law, and she and her husband were wise enough to buy long-term care ages ago, when people were insuring you for life. And so she became disabled about 10 years ago, had a stroke. We moved her into an assisted living place because she could do stuff on her own. She just couldn't live alone. We moved her into assisted living. Long-term care insurance kicked in. $3,000 a month. That goes a long ways. $3,000 a month for 10 years. $360,000. That she's spent so far. She'd only paid, I don't know, $10,000 by the time that she drew it. So it's an important thing to think about, and maybe you think, well, I'm really not old enough to be thinking about that sort of thing. That's fine. I've got lots of kids. Don't let them take care of me. That's fine as well. But you need to think about that. It costs money to preach, and you need tools. You have books, equipment, computers, that sort of thing, software. Who's going to pay for that? You got to think about how much this costs and what are you going to pay? Retirement accounts. So this is retirement. You say, well, I'm never going to retire. Good. But you're not going to be able to do this forever, okay? There just comes a time when the brethren don't want to hear you anymore. And you have to go do something else. You may still be serving in the church, okay? That's fine, but you're not getting paid to preach anymore. And so they either retire you or they, you know, God retires you or, you know, you decide to change over, but but what are you going to do? In talking about retirement, please do not underestimate the time value of money, if you know about this. If you take $100 a month and you put it in a sack, and you do that for 30 years, it'll be worth $36,000. You'll have $36,000 in that sack. It won't be worth $36,000. You know, it won't buy what it did 30 years before, but you'll still have $36,000. But if you can find an investment account or a savings account that pays just 1% interest, and you put the same $36,000 back at the end of 30 years, you'll have $42,000. And that's just 1%. If you can find a way to get it into an investment that pays 8%, the same $100 a month gets you $151,000 after 30 years. So you start out when you're, 30 years old, contributing that $100 a month, and at least you've got that. If you do $200 a month, well, now you're on up there. Now you're $300,000. Let us suppose that you make $50,000 a year and you fully fund your IRA account and you're able to contribute another $200 a month to an investment account of some sort. Okay. If you do well over a period of the same 30 years, you can have well over $1 million in your account. How much money will you need to retire? I don't know. I don't know what it takes for you to live. But here's what they tell me. You need enough money so that you can draw out 4% a year and live on it. Okay? So if you've got $500,000, 4% a year is $20,000. Is that right? Yeah, $20,000, okay? If you get Social Security, you get Social Security, $1,500 a month. Your wife gets Social Security, $1,500 a month. That's $3,000. And you add to, that's $36,000. And you add this $20,000, it's $56,000. So if you can live on $56,000, you got it made. All you got to do is get that nest egg, you know, that $500,000. The sooner you start, the better off you'll be. What haven't we talked about? Yeah, let me come back to that one second. What we haven't talked about is food. There are normal expenses, you know, light bill, food bill. Your kids going to go to private school? They're going to go to public school. They're going to have lunch money. What does all of that take? And once you've taken all of that into consideration, now you're down here at X. And you can say, okay, that's how much money I have to have. So when the brethren say, what will it take for you to come here? You can say, I got to have X. Please stand your ground. You may not go there. It's okay. Ultimately, our trust has to be where? In the Lord. Okay? It has to be in the Lord. All right. Give me one second. I got to do one thing here. A question came up about education. Let's say you have your bachelor's degree and you've been working with this church and they're paying you $50,000 a year. And you go ahead and you get your master's degree. Should you get more money? Well, they got a better guy, supposedly, right? So, how much money should you get? If you're an elder here, I want you to remember there's only one place your preacher can go to get a master's degree. Every place I've ever interviewed for the last 30 years has required it. Okay? There's only one place you can go, and that's a Christian university. Private university of some sort that's religiously oriented. So you pick up your master's degree, somebody know, you pick how many hours does it take for a what are they calling it now? Master of Ministry degree? MDiv, what's it cost? How many hours is an MDiv? 81 hours. What is it an hour? 1,500? Depends on where you go. Let's say it's about $1,500. You're at $120,000 for the degree. Okay? You understand this is your choice. So you have to ask yourself whether or not you can get a decent return. If you've spent $120,000 and you think a decent return ought to be 2%, then you're going to need a $2,400 a year raise. Okay? Maybe you think it should be a higher percentage than that. I don't know. The question is, what can you get? Okay? But I think that elders ought to think about exactly that. Now, suppose you went to school on their nickel. Okay? You're going to school while you're working for them. While it's true that you picked up the tab for the tuition, okay, it is also true they gave you the time, and it took time. So that's time you took away. So you have to keep all of that in mind and not be too hard on it. Okay, you had a question.
I was going to say, when people move, especially, you need to compare cost of living between the two locations.
Oh, absolutely.
That's one thing we've looked at. And I live in a very low cost of living area, so my salary is low, but when I compare it to my brother who lives in the high cost of living, yes, he makes $10,000 more than me, but I actually live better than him because my money goes through him.
Yes, yes. And you see, all of this is all a business matter. It's all a financial matter. You have to think it through. You can't just say, well, I'm a preacher, I don't want to think about those things. And believe me, there are a lot of guys who think that way. Okay? I don't want to think this way. Next thing you know, they're in all kinds of financial trouble. Okay? Well, maybe that's you. Maybe that's where you are. Ultimately, none of us do it for the money. We could have done something else, okay? But we feel the call, and we have to leave that up to the Lord. I told you my wife and I have long-term care insurance, but wow, that can run out. It only covers 6 years. These days, you can't buy a for-life policy. So ours just covers us 6 years. What happens if I have a stroke and I linger for 10, you know? It's in the Lord's hands, okay? Lean on the Lord with all your heart. Don't trust in yourself, okay? But in the meantime, be smart, okay? Anybody else? Yes, sir.
What would you suggest as far as diversifying income streams as far as, you know, teaching positions or counseling? Or I know there are preachers that kind of double and triple dip.
Well, a lot of that has to do with what your brethren will allow you to do, okay? Because you are under their employ, and they get to decide. Now, you get to decide if you're going to stay. You may think, I'm going to go into private practice counseling, and I want to preach in addition to that. And the church says, sorry, we don't want to do that. Maybe you could talk them into it. Maybe you could show them how that this can be beneficial to the church. Maybe you can do that. But if not, then your choice is clear. If you're determined, you got to make a move, okay? And so that's just a business decision, all right? Be careful about trying to do other stuff and preach. My experience is, I can't speak for everybody, but my experience is that whatever else you try to do suffers and preaching suffers, okay? You may have a good idea for another income stream, but monetizing it and making it work is a really big deal, okay? And I have spent a lot of time spinning my wheels doing stuff that I thought would get me some more money, and it did not. And ultimately, I just decided preaching is what I do, and I'm going to devote my time to that, and we'll just let the Lord worry about the rest of it. So my wife got a job, okay? Anybody else? Hey, some of you have been here all three classes. Thank you very much. I thank all of you for coming at least to this class. I hope you found it helpful. If nothing else, understand you got to think about this. You got to think about the business end of ministry. Thanks for being here.
So we can watch for 80,000.